we do it on a Friday, especially when we're in good moods. Crank it up.
It's the conference finals. Here we come, baby.
Ryder doesn't get this in his house. Trust me. Crank it up. I know what Ryder's listening to. He's got like Hootie and the Blowfish. What else do you think he listens to?
Green Day.
Green Day. Crank it up. Let's see if Ryder is like humming along.
I'm sure he's not singing along.
He's on the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Bill Ryder, he can be heard nationally every day on CBS Sports Radio. He can be seen on CBS Sports HQ. He's also battling a little sinus infection, so he's going to sound like he's smoking menthols with Jimmy in the other studio. But he'll tough it out as best he can. You have that song on your playlist?
Sorry, guys. I had to turn down the Hootie. What's going on?
I only want to be with you.
Hootie. I haven't listened to Hootie in years, but I wouldn't turn it off in the car.
I like Hootie and the Blowfish. I wasn't blaspheming against them. Let's talk basketball here because we love talking basketball with you. So the Heat, they go to the Eastern Conference Finals again. It's just a terrific franchise, a tremendous organization. But let's talk first about James Harden because that's the national conversation today when it comes to the NBA. If you're the Sixers, what do you do with James Harden? I mean, how do you look at last night's performance and like, is there any excuse for that?
No, there's none. I mean, James Harden is a debilitating embarrassment and a huge problem for Daryl Morey, as you guys know, runs basketball operations now in Philadelphia. And for all the problems that are going on with the Sixers, there's a lot that Daryl inherited. Harden's the one he brought in. I think Embiid said it best. He's not the Houston James Harden. And even the Houston James Harden couldn't perform in the playoffs. The guy missed 22 straight threes once against the Golden State Warriors. I don't even have the words for it, guys. It is so awful and so ugly. If I hadn't seen it myself, I would think you were, if describing it to me, exaggerating horribly.
And, Bill, what about Embiid? Because he'd been a part of the quote-unquote process for years now. Should he request a trade? He's wasting away his MVP years.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, I love Embiid. I mean, I'd love him maybe to throw guys under the bus a little bit less. Like, he's not wrong about Harden or what he said about Simmons last year. It's not helpful, but I just feel for the guy. He is shackled by terrible decisions in that front office. I'm not a big Doc Rivers guy. I don't think Doc's much of a coach. That's just me. And just it feels like every time Embiid's playing through injury, and this time it's the double injury, right? It's the eye socket and the thumb. All of that said, like I personally loathe it when guys force trades out of their organizations. I don't like it. And so for all the criticism of LeBron, he's never done that. I would rather see Embiid force his organization into the coach that he wants and maybe impose himself a little bit on roster decisions because not everybody liked Jimmy Butler in that Sixers locker room when Butler was there. But Embiid did. Embiid wanted Jimmy Butler around. And Jimmy Butler's not screaming, "You wanted Tobias Harris over me," after that game if Embiid were imposing his will a little more on the roster.
Is Jimmy Butler, you mentioned him there, is he an NBA superstar? Or is he an NBA playoffs superstar? And if that's the case, is that kind of an inspired approach for an NBA player to say, hey, I'm going to do enough to make sure that we're the one seed or a top seed during the regular season, but I will turn it up to a level during the playoffs that you don't ever see, but I save myself for that. Like maybe playoff Jimmy, like maybe that's when he's an NBA superstar.
All right, so here's my take, and I have the tape to prove I've been saying this for 2 years and a lot the last year. I think in the regular season, I haven't looked at it closely, but he's a top 25 or 30 player. But I have no qualms saying that in the playoffs, he's a top 10 NBA player. He vaults ahead of all of these guys. I'm sure you guys know the stats. He averages 7 more points per game in the postseason, the regular season, which in and of itself would be insane. But just you have to remember, it's a slower pace of play. There's usually less possessions per game, so you're getting fewer shots up. So you shouldn't be able to score 7 more points per game. It's obviously under massive pressure, and it's against traditionally better defenses because you're playing postseason teams. Yeah, the guy's an absolute machine in the playoffs. And so It's one of these weird things because when we do over at CBS at the website, right, CBS Sports, we'll do top 10 players or top 15 players or top 20 players over the course of a year. And Butler's not usually on that list or at the top, but there are some guys, but there aren't many guys I would rather have in the postseason on my team if I'm a coach or a player or a fan than Jimmy Butler. It's amazing.
And we're in the Eastern Conference Finals now. You know, we're celebrating. We're playing music today. On the other side, Boston and Milwaukee. Who would we want to play? Who do we match up better against?
Ooh, that's a great – so, okay, I'll say this. So I think I told you guys this last time I was on. I've got a ticket on the Heat at either 12-1 or 14-1 that I'm now going to start looking for a way to hedge a little bit now that we're in the conference finals. In part because I think whoever wins the series, the other series between Milwaukee and the Celtics, is for me a 60-40 favorite, either way. Not that Miami can't win. I just think it's a different deal altogether. Who would you rather play? It's a really hard, because the Chris Middleton question, you know, I think I'd rather play Boston, to be honest. Like, I know that, like, in order for the Bucks to beat you, Bobby Portis Jr. or Grayson Allen, one of those guys probably have to contribute in an interesting way, but we've seen them do that. I just think as well-coached as the Celtics are, as good as Jason Tatum is, as great as the Celtics are defensively, and they are, there's something about Giannis that is almost supernatural, and no matter how good you are, no matter how good you are defensively, and the Heat are obviously great defensively, I think Giannis is good enough to win 2-3 games on his own in a playoff series against anybody. And so then you throw in another game maybe at home or a game where the opposing team doesn't play well. We know the Heat at times have struggled offensively. If I'm you guys, I'd rather play the Celtics.
Bill Ryder from CBS Sports is with us. Who do you think wins that series, the Celtics or the Bucks?
I think it's the Bucks. I thought it was the Bucks the whole time, even without Middleton. I'm going to stick with it. I know that sort of the popular wisdom right now is Boston's going to win game six, force a game seven, and then probably win it. And I can tell you that I have bet the underdog in every game in that series, whoever's been getting points I've gone with, because it feels like a coin flip to me. But I think there's something about Milwaukee winning that last game that, and they're not going to break the Celtics, but I just think it reminds Milwaukee, if they need it, these guys won an NBA championship last year. They can do without Chris Middleton. Jrue Holiday, who was 2 games ago, 5 of 22, I think it'll loosen up a little bit his ability to be better offensively and help out. You're going to see some of those role players hit more shots. Some of that pressure's off. I like Milwaukee, but again, each game to me is a coin flip. I think those teams are really even.
I'll get back into that in a second, but you talk about, you know, having that ticket and gambling. We are on this unprecedented bad run, and we have bet James Harden overs this series. The only game that
we decided. That's why you can't bet the over on Harden.
Over 2.5 made threes. I mean, the guy was making over 2.5 made threes in his sleep a few years ago. And Embiid was out.
I'm on a crazy good run. I had a bad night the other night, but I'm on the best run of my life in the NBA, and I have bet every Harden under every single game. I bet the point total under every game, the three-point total several games. I have faded the only bets I've lost. There's like two bets I've lost have been when I bet on Philly like an idiot. I live by only a few rules, but one of them is bet against James Harden in the postseason whenever you can.
That's a great rule. But we're getting ahead. And the only time that we decided to lay off James Harden was when he went for, you know, 30 and had, you know, seven threes or whatever. That was the night that we showed restraint. Last night, we had Jimmy Butler over 25.5, so that was a good ticket. But we had one of our gambling experts on during the day, Rob Pizzola in Canada. We love him. And he had come on with us the week before. He went 4 for 4. He was just on fire. So I told him yesterday, I go, hey, can you give us, you know, anything? Like, we're struggling. We need a good couple of bets tonight. And he gave us, it's so great. I mean, I was talking with Crowder and Solana off the air about this. He gave us the White Sox pitcher, Dylan Cease. They were playing the Yankees last night. He said, bet Dylan Cease under 7.5 strikeouts because he's a good strikeout pitcher, but, you know, he went through the whole Yankees lineup and blah, 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 and bet Dylan Cease under 7.5 strikeouts. The first 7 outs that he recorded last night were strikeouts.
Oh, my God. The first
7 outs. And he put up the 8th strikeout in the 4th inning. The first 7 outs were strikeouts. This is the unprecedented bad run that we're on. He also had us take the Minnesota Wild, St. Louis Blues over. I think it was 6.5 last night. They ended with 6 goals. We're just on this unprecedented.
I got one for you. Now, I haven't seen the. Do you guys know what the point total is for Luka on Sunday? Is it what 33? I haven't seen it. 34. 34 and a half,
not,
probably.
I've not seen it. I could take a look right now, but go ahead.
I'm betting the over no matter what it is because Luka in elimination games averages almost 39 points per game, and through 22 postseason games, his averages of, I think it's 32.5, 9.5, 8.5, have only been equaled by Michael Jordan, whose sample size obviously is markedly higher and markedly more important. I don't know who's going to win that game, but I am personally going to hammer the Luka over because I think he'd rather lose by 11 and shoot 40 times than allow Jalen Brunson or Spencer Dinwiddie to be the deciding factors in that game. And
yeah,
the number will be
sense.
High. I'm still going
that
the over.
Makes sense. I don't see any props, player props on that yet.
It's
I see
a little
Phoenix
early,
is
yeah.
a 6-point. Phoenix is a 6-point favorite. I kind of like Dallas plus the points.
I'm going
to
bet
there.
Dallas.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm not the president of the Chris Paul fan club, so take this with a grain of salt, especially if it involves your money. But
we know.
Yeah, the guy's been amazing at stretches this postseason, but the real story is kind of the story that always is. He runs out of steam, or he runs out of energy, or he gets hurt, or it gets to him. It's a distinction without a difference at this point for me. He's not playing well. He doesn't look like himself. He either hurt his thumb at the end of that game or pretended to cook up an excuse, and he probably hurt himself. He's turning the ball over. That puts tons of pressure on Devin Booker, who's starting to be less efficient because he's got to do more. And I told you guys this. Chris Paul's a guy, he has such a grip on his team that when he is panicked or angry or frustrated or nervous, it impacts his team. It's like Andy Reid used to be as a football coach before he finally got Mahomes to kind of be calm for him. The Suns, are a 6-point better team. They could lose that game. If that's the line, I'm going to bet on Dallas.
And on the other side of the West, Golden State, Memphis, are the Draymond, Clay, Steph, they don't look like they did a couple years ago, Bill. It just doesn't look the same way the basketball I saw them winning championships look like. Are they getting old? What's going on?
I think they're getting even more arrogant. It's a great question. I was thinking about this the other day, and I was reaching out to a few NBA sources I have, and I think it's more about playing with their food than it is not knowing how to kill it. There is a laid-back nature to the way, and I've seen it. I've covered those guys back in the day, right? I've been to, I don't know how many, 60 or 70 Warriors games and a bunch of their games leading up to the 73-win season, all their postseason games, blah, blah, blah. And I've seen them occasionally for a quarter or even a game sometimes get lackadaisical, not take a team seriously. I think that's what's going on. I assume they're going to beat Memphis. I think they're going to beat Memphis. Now, Memphis is really good even without John Morant. My assumption is that if they don't screw this up against the Grizzlies, they'll lock in against the Suns and they'll get back to who they are. I think it's in there because they are the top defensively rated team in the NBA, and with Steph playing well and Jordan Poole doing his thing, they can be a top 10 offense. But you're right, it hasn't looked right. I think it's arrogance rather than age, but we're going to find out over the next month.
Bill Ryder, CBS Sports Radio, is with us. Are the Heat getting love nationally? You know,
no.
We live in our bubble here, not to overuse the term bubble, but we live in our own bubble down here. And I think we all kind of feel like they don't get a lot of love nationally that, you know, even today. And we started with it. I'm guilty of it. But the conversation was about James Harden before it was about Jimmy Butler. We haven't even mentioned Eric Spoelstra, yet we've mentioned other coaches. Do they get love nationally?
No, not at all. In fact, that's one of the things we talk about on my national radio show is just how, I don't know if it's under the radar. You know what it is, and this is good for Heat fans, the way that people view the Miami Heat nationally reminds me of the way that people viewed the Milwaukee Bucks nationally before the Milwaukee Bucks won an NBA championship. Like, oh, they're good, and they've got a star player, but they're not going to win the whole thing, and they're not that interesting. And look at all these other storylines. Look at these other teams. Look at all these other soap operas. And both those organizations, very drama-free, although the Heat not so much this year with the Butler-Spoelstra thing, right? But, like, not a lot of drama, really good culture, guys know their roles, and they win basketball games. I mean, the Heat are the top seed in the East for a reason, and no, I do not think they get a lot of national love and respect. I do think, as I said, the Bucks-Celtics, the winner, that's the favorite. But Miami's been under the radar in such an interesting way, and I don't understand it, given they've won championships. Miami's a cool town. Jimmy Butler's a really interesting personality. But, no, you guys are fairly anonymous in the conversation out there.
And one thing we talked about going into the playoffs was how the Heat, they go so deep on the bench, and everybody said, you know, who's missing time? I'm looking at all the games, Bill. Every team is going 10-12 deep. I was told in the past that you stay at 7-8 maybe in the playoffs. Teams are going into double digits. Every single team in the league right now. What's up with that? Why did it change from years past?
Yeah, I think it's because we've seen so many championship runs be sidelined by guys getting hurt. And just like you start with the Warriors against the Raptors and all those years in the postseason, the finals, all those guys go down. Obviously, they're not in the playoffs with Kawhi Leonard's injury. This year, Chris Paul ran out of steam. In the past, I mean, I know people are making the argument Embiid's injuries, even though he played. I think that coaches – so the game has advanced so much, right, from 10, 12 years ago, and Spoelstra's a perfect example. The best coaches in the NBA understand they're juggling a lot of things all at once, and if you can pull the minutes down for some of your guys, if you can pull some of the wear and tear off, I think it increases the likelihood you can make it through what is, in effect, a two-month battle of a marathon if you're going to win an NBA championship without injuries. It's not a guarantee, but we've just seen that wear and tear is a real deal, especially coming off the weird schedule the last few years of COVID. So I think those rotations have expanded a little bit to just try and strike that balance.
When you look at the rosters, though, because with Max Strus and Gabe Vincent and Victor Oladipo, is there a role in the next series for Duncan Robinson? There wasn't in this series. Is there a role for him in the next series?
I mean, you guys tell me. I don't think so. And I know they gave him all that money. And I like Duncan Robinson the way that he shoots. The problem is he doesn't play defense the way those other guys do. And then the Victor Oladipo thing, I mean, Strus has been awesome to watch and a super cool story. But the Oladipo addition, I don't even know, guys. Did he play 8 games in the regular season or not? Something like that, like a handful of games. Yeah. Barely played. I don't know what the vibe was in Miami. I'd love you to tell me. But I know nationally very few of us sort of expected much out of him because we've sort of been down that road before. Victor's an incredibly nice guy. But I think most people thought, unfortunately, his career was over, or at least it wasn't what it used to be. And so seeing his contributions at times in the first two series the Heat have played, the level of defense he can still play, the spark he can bring, to me, I mean, that is light years ahead of most players that don't contribute in a regular season, to say nothing of Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, the thing about Victor Oladipo, you kind of alluded to it there. He's just so easy to root for.
You wanted
to see him do well, and then he came out there. He had the 40-point game or 41-point game during the regular season. You know, again, in the mop-up when no one else is playing. But you're rooting for him. But he really has shown that he is a viable asset out there. There's a real big question coming with Duncan Robinson in the offseason. I want to talk about the Eastern Conference Finals, obviously, and the playoffs, and I want to celebrate, and I want to laugh at James Harden. But there is a very big looming question about Duncan Robinson coming, is there not?
Yeah, it's really interesting because of every organization in the NBA, I think there's literally not an organization where the front office and the coaching staff are more in sync than the Miami Heat. For obvious reasons, Pat Riley retained Eric Spoelstra when Riley came from New York. And I think Spoelstra had been on the job for a month or whatever it was. But he's really like a Riley. He is a Riley disciple, and they work in conjunction. And this is the classic front office gave a contract to a guy that the head coach obviously has evolved to a point where he doesn't need and doesn't use. There's value. I mean, Duncan Robinson has value. If you can shoot in the NBA, there's value. But the Heat are really unique in the kind of talent that they take in and they utilize, and they see in guys things other places don't. If they don't see Duncan Robinson as a key part of what they do, I'm not sure how much of a market there is out there for Duncan Robinson relative to his income, relative to what he's paid.
Yeah, $90 million. How much was it over, Solana? 4 seasons? 5 seasons?
4 seasons, I believe.
4 seasons, $90 million. It's a lot of three-pointers that you need to put up there to make that worth it. Bill Reiter, CBS Sports. So James Harden or Doc Rivers back in Philly next season, you think?
I'm so glad I'm not Daryl Morey. The right answer is no to both those questions, but I don't know what choice you have politically if you're Daryl Morey with James Harden. You basically traded away a basketball team to get him. Say what you want about Ben Simmons, but Daryl was all in politically and just what he gave up for Harden and seems to be a true believer. And I wouldn't bring Doc Rivers back, but the guy has a ton of years and a ton of money left on his contract. And so if you're Daryl, do you really want to fire a coach that is pretty well-respected? It's not universal, but pretty well-respected, and have to explain to your owner why you're paying that money to go get somebody else with a question mark while also trying to figure out what in the hell to do with the beard? I don't know, guys. To be honest, I think it's the biggest question of the offseason. I personally think they should move on from both, But that's easier said than done. There's cap realities. There's not really a market for Harden. It's a really tough spot to be in.
Oh, my God. But wouldn't that – I mean, I was saying to Crowder earlier in the show, like, you would understand if Joel Embiid wanted to punch Harden in the face last night. Joel Embiid's out there with a fractured orbital and the ligament damage in his thumb, and James Harden doesn't even look like he wants to be out there.
No, he's playing hide-and-go-seek and trying to be the guy that hid the whole time. He took a shot in the third quarter, a shot in the fourth quarter. I don't know if you guys saw this. Then afterwards, someone asked him, you know, basically, what the hell were you doing? And he's like, oh, we ran our offense and the ball didn't move back to me. I mean, his utter disregard for winning, for the game, for responsibility, for being competitive, I wouldn't be surprised if Joel Embiid did punch him in the face eventually, because Embiid wants to, Embiid's a winner, right? And he wants to win. And it's probably wrong to say this about another human being, but I don't think Harden cares. Like, I've got friends who are rich. I live in Manhattan Beach, California. They don't care about their silly jobs they have, and Harden reminds me of those guys in the sense they don't need the money, they're good, and they've got other things going on.
I was saying that to Crowder. It's like, I hate being the guy who goes, oh, that guy doesn't care, because to be a professional athlete, you obviously have to care. But it is hard to come to another conclusion when you watch James Harden out there. I saw some analyst this morning saying you could have five guys guarding him. He'll figure out a way to get shots up. Like, if he's shooting two times the second half, that's because he doesn't want to take a shot.
A few years ago, he averaged 24.6 shots per game in the regular season. I mean, it's either he doesn't care. It's probably complicated, right? I'm not a psychologist, but there also just might be a humiliation fear factor, right? He may just have some feeling of panic or whatever it is and just know he can't do it or think he can't do it. And like that kid who, like, goes to right field in Little League because his dad made him play and then curses the heavens when some dude hits the ball the opposite way to him. I mean, that's what Harden – he's a professional player. He's a future Hall of Famer. He's won an MVP.
He's an MVP. Isn't that a crazy thing to say about him, that he's the kid hiding in right field?
Yeah. He either doesn't care or he cares so much he can't function. Either way, it is the same catastrophe for the Sixers.
Wow. What an offseason Philly's going to have. I'm with you, man. I'm glad I don't have to make that decision, because there's
Philly.
Yeah,
and the damn Nets. The Nets with Kyrie and KD and Ben and them. The Philly and the Nets got a hell of an offseason coming up.
I mean, I don't understand. If you're Brooklyn, I don't understand how you can make any argument for keeping Kyrie Irving or Steve Nash, to be quite honest.
Well, you can't keep Kyrie. I mean, and you heard Sean Marks, I think, lay the groundwork way too late. You can't. Now, Steve, here's my name drop. Steve Nash, who is my neighbor, seven houses down.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah. My kid once told him to do something anatomically impossible to himself because he thought he was somebody else, and we had to tell him. Oh, yeah, it was awful. We had to tell him not to swear at adults, but especially the resident Hall of Famer.
Goodness.
Steve Nash is a super nice guy. I think he's like Ty Lue in the sense that I didn't know if Ty Lue was a good coach when he coached LeBron because he didn't coach anybody, right? I think Ty Lue is actually a very good head coach. Maybe Steve Nash is a good head coach, but Kyrie told us before this all started they don't have a head coach, and I don't know to what degree Steve actually coaches Kyrie Irving in the Nets.
I mean, look at this guy. You talk about, you know, people sometimes get rich and fat and happy. I mean, Bill Reiter, he's living the life with CBS Sports HQ and CBS Sports Network Radio, and he's neighbors with Steve Nash, and he's gutting it out with us, Crowder, on AM radio with a sinus infection. This is a guy. You're the Joel Embiid of media.
Last night on HQ, if anybody was watching, I was smiling for 30 seconds while I said goodbye to Eric Casilius, and I let out a cough that was so loud when they cut me that the entire control room, I guess, thought I died, and they called to make sure I was alive. So I'm doing it. I'm fighting through it.
We appreciate you gutting it out. Bill Reiter, CBS Sports Radio. We always appreciate you talking hoops with us, Bill.
Always, guys. Thanks for having me on.
There you go. Enjoy your weekend. Gutting it out, man.
And
then you got, Solana missing half a show yesterday because he had an appointment. I mean, what are we doing here?
Fluid on his knee.
Fluid
Let me go
on
talk
the
to
knee.
Somebody.
A hole behind his kneecap.